Wouldn't it be awesome to sit in on a debate between A.W. Tozer and John Piper? Well, today's episode is about as close as we can get to that. It's going to be a lot of fun. Let's dive right in.
You answer all my questions. You can never tell no lies. You're always telling me what it's all about, but some don't listen to your replies. You say to us we can't do enough, and when I try, I'm a fool. This time I'm spent and I've realized that I can't make it through. I need you. The words you say, your gracious love just gives you away. The words you say, you're so believable.
Welcome to the Soteriology 101 podcast with Professor Leighton Flowers. Join our online university classroom as we discuss the doctrines of grace and God's amazing plan for salvation.
You're so believable.
We've got a lot to cover, so let's dive right in. I want to talk about John Piper because I think he has been one of the most influential leaders in this resurgence of Calvinism, and I have a lot of respect for John Piper. I really do. He's been one of the people in my life who, in my earlier years, really shaped and formed much of my theological journey. And if you haven't heard some of the earlier podcasts, please go back and listen, and you'll see that I do genuinely have a respect for John Piper, as well as many of the other Calvinistic theologians, because I think what they have brought to the table is a discussion about the deep need to understand the glory of God, and the purpose of our existence is really to bring Him glory, and that our delight is found in His glory. And that discussion and that pendulum swing from the really, what I call this kind of this namby-pamby, easy believism, this chicken soup for the soul kind of tickle the ears and never stir the waters, and the kind of people who, when you ask questions about election and predestination, they quote John 3:16 and move on as if that answers all the questions. That pendulum swing from that far extreme kind of fake smiling, happy-go-lucky kind of a church, that I think that's the resurgence of Calvinism has risen out of the depths of that kind of church that just doesn't take seriously some of the deeper doctrines of the wrath of God, of the sin of man, and the grace of God and all that comes with that. And I was in that. I was that young, restless, and reformed guy who just latched on to men like John Piper because he was so deep and serious and passionate about the truths of God's sovereignty and answering the questions that were plaguing my mind with regard to Romans 9 and Ephesians 1 and other passages like this. And so I do have a deep respect for the man. One of the things that led me away from Calvinism was reading A.W. Tozer and C.S. Lewis, who are also very passionate and in-depth thinkers, but who also are not Calvinistic. And when I first came across A.W. Tozer and C.S. Lewis, I was just like, and I found out they weren't Calvinistic. I was blown away because I thought, man, these guys are smart. They believe in God and the glory of God, and they talk about His passion. When I read them, I think, man, these guys know God. They're smart. Why in the world are they not Calvinistic? And that's what really led me on a journey after about 10 years of holding to Calvinistic doctrine. That's what led me on the journey of trying to figure out why would intellectual, smart, scholarly men like that not believe these doctrines? And I hadn't really vetted this scholarly side, the other side of the Calvinistic answers. And so that's what led me on that journey. And in that process, I listening to Piper, I was reminded that Piper oftentimes quoted A.W. Tozer. And I couldn't understand how Piper had such a respect for A.W. Tozer, yet they held to differing views with regard to the sovereignty of God, especially since Piper seems to be so known for and noted for his views on sovereignty with regard to Calvinism. And this led me back to one of the messages I had heard Piper preach years ago. It is on YouTube. You can go there, and if you look under, it's part 1 of 9, Introduction Seminar for Bethlehem Institute, March 7th of 2008. The topic is the Doctrines of Grace, Calvinism. And so this is an intro to this part 1 of 9. It's like a 40-minute video, so there's a lot of information here where he gives his view on Calvinism. And I remember this message because he starts by quoting A.W. Tozer. And in that quote from A.W. Tozer, he really hammers this concept of idolatry and this concept of having a lower view of God and how important it is to address this Western culture where we have such a tickling ears type of culture and in addressing these things. Listen to what John Piper says and in his intro to A.W. Tozer. I'll let you hear it from him.
I want to read a few quotes from A.W. Tozer. Tozer was a pastor in the middle of the last century who wrote quite a few books, and almost all of them about God. And he had a very huge passion to reorient the American church on a bigger God. He lived at the same time that J.B. Phillips was living. And if you're my age or roundabout, you can remember what J.B. Phillips contributed to the church in the 60s. He contributed a paraphrase of the New Testament, and he contributed a little book called Your God Is What? Too Small. Your God is too small. So you had J.B. Phillips, and you had A.W. Tozer, and there have always been others, helping the church wake up to the American minimization of God. We Americans are so amazingly self-sufficient and self-determining and self-almost everything that for Americans to hold a high view of the greatness of God is more difficult than some.
I'm just going to pause it right there, and I'll continue to play it in just a second, because I want you to hear the quote he reads from Tozer, because I think you can see where he's going. He's introducing Calvinism by first introducing the problem with today's Western world and the culture within the American church today, which is that it doesn't have a very high view of God. It doesn't take seriously the glory of God. And there are men, and he includes himself probably as part of those people, who are drawing the church back to focusing upon a higher view of God. And I agree. I think John Piper has done that. He just does so from the perspective of drawing them to a Calvinistic perspective of God, whereas A.W. Tozer would not have had that perspective. In fact, I've read this before, and I want us to hear it again, because it really goes to the irony of the fact that John Piper uses A.W. Tozer as his introduction to this point. Because we know from Tozer, in reading his teachings, that he was not Calvinistic. He says this. He says, God sovereignly decreed that man should be free to exercise moral choice, and man from the beginning has fulfilled that decree by making his choice between good and evil. When he chooses to do evil, he does not thereby countervail the sovereign will of God, but fulfills it. Inasmuch as the eternal decree decided not which choice the man should make, but that he should be free to make it. Did you catch that? So A.W. Tozer's view is that God's eternal decree decided not which choice a man would make, but that he would be free to make it. And he goes on to say, if in his absolute freedom God has willed to give man limited freedom, who is there to stay his hand or say, why dost thou? Man's will is free. Catch this. Man's will is free because God is sovereign. A God less than sovereign could not bestow moral freedom upon his creatures. He would be afraid to do so. A.W. Tozer, The Knowledge of the Holy Attributes of God. Now, there's also sermons online. You can look up A.W. Tozer, The Sovereignty of God, and there is a link to an MP3 of him preaching a message which he covers this topic, and he talks about this. And so A.W. Tozer's view of this subject is that the higher view of God and his sovereignty is one in which views God as so sovereignly in control and so sovereign that he is willing to allow for man to be free. And it's just like we talked about in the last episode, there's not really a way to explain this. He appeals to mystery as well. We don't understand how it all works together. But his ultimate point is that God is so sovereign that the higher view of God is that his sovereignty would allow for human freedom. And a God less than sovereign would be afraid to allow for creatures to be free and to have the ability to make a choice between two possibilities. And so A.W. Tozer's view, the higher view of God, is he sees his own view as higher than that of the Calvinistic view, the deterministic view, because man is free. And it kind of goes back to the illustration I used last week about the chess master. Which one is more powerful, the chess master who has to play both sides of the chessboard in order to ensure his victory, or the chess master who is able to take on opponent after opponent and beat them soundly because he's so good at chess? Obviously, the second is more powerful. The second one is more impressive. The second one, according to A.W. Tozer, would be more sovereign from that perspective because he is able to take on even the freedom of an opponent, the freedom of someone else. And that's Tozer's view. Now, keeping that in mind, listen to the quote. Listen to the irony of the quote that Piper is using Tozer to introduce Calvinism and his view of God and his conclusions about God and what he assumes to be true of God. Listen to Piper's quote of Tozer.
So here are a few quotes that resonate with me to this very day. It was written 60 years ago, but they're still true. He said, "It is my opinion that the Christian conception of God, current in the middle years of the 20th century, is so decadent as to be utterly beneath the dignity of the Most High God, and actually to constitute for professed believers something amounting to a moral calamity. All the problems of heaven and earth, though they were to confront us together at once and at once, would be nothing compared with the overwhelming problem of God. That is, that He is, what He is like, and what we as moral beings must do about Him. The man who comes to a right belief about God is relieved of 10,000 temporal problems." That's an amazing statement. Continuing down the page a little bit. "Let us beware lest we in our pride accept the erroneous notion that idolatry consists only in kneeling before visible objects of adoration, and the civilized peoples are therefore free from it. The essence of idolatry is the entertainment of thoughts about God that are unworthy of Him." I think that's a very penetrating and indicting definition of idolatry. "It begins in the mind and may be present where no overt act of worship has taken place. Wrong ideas about God are not only the fountain from which the polluted waters of idolatry flow, they are themselves idolatrous. The idolater simply imagines things about God and acts as if they were true." In other words, according to that definition of idolatry, you must think rightly about God in order not to be an idolater. Because if you entertain thoughts about Him that are untrue about Him or unworthy of Him, those very thoughts your affections are responding to, and they're not the way He is. One more section. "The first step down for any church is taken when it surrenders its high opinion of God. Before the Christian church goes into eclipse anywhere, there must first be a corrupting of her simple basic theology. She simply gets a wrong answer to the question, 'What is God like?' and goes on from there. Though she may continue to cling to a sound nominal creed, her practical working creed has become false. The masses of her adherents come to believe that God is different from what He actually is, and that is heresy of the most insidious and deadly kind. The heaviest obligation lying upon the Christian church today is to purify and elevate her concept of God until it is once more worthy of Him. Amen." So that's Tozer, and it rang true with me. I think that's exactly right, that we live in a day where the churches in America, by and large, as David Wells has said so powerfully in his book, No Place for Truth and God in the Wasteland, in which the glory of God weighs lightly upon the church. God is not felt in your typical church as a weighty reality. People want to be cheery. They want to be lighthearted, not weighty. And so in order to feel friendly, we calculate everything in an entertainment mode so that people feel chipper. And how can a magnificent God survive in that atmosphere? How can a right view of God and right affections for God? When I read this book, I get a different flavor. This book is an amazingly serious book. There's weightiness everywhere you turn in this book. And so it seems if we're to be biblical, which we are, then our churches should have about them a flavor, not of moroseness, but of serious joy, weighty joy. So that's number two in my introductory reflections, the Tozer missing piece of the great big God in our culture and in our churches and our psyche.
Do you see the irony of John Piper in his introduction to Calvinism, in the point he's trying to make in raising the bar in the Western Church of seeing God as higher and more holy, and in the seriousness and the weightiness of who God is? He quotes Tozer, who, in his own estimation, viewed the Calvinistic form of God as lower. And so ultimately, he's quoting from a man who would have seen John Piper's views as holding to the wrong ideas about God. And he's quoting him saying that the wrong ideas about God are not only the fountain from which polluted waters of idolatry flow, they are themselves idolatrous. And Tozer says the perverted notions about God, which Tozer would have believed about Calvinism, that it's a perverted notion about God. And he quotes him saying, the perverted notions about God soon rot the religion in which they appear. Do you see the irony of that? Tozer is warning, maybe even John Piper himself, that you can't hold to a lower form or a lower view of God, because the higher view of God is one in which holds God as sovereign over free creatures. And that a God less than sovereign wouldn't allow for such freedom. He would be afraid to do so. And so Tozer sees his view as higher than the Calvinistic view of sovereignty. And it goes back kind of like to the illustration that we've already pointed to with the chess master, which is really more impressive, which is really more powerful, the chess master who has to play both sides of the board in order to ensure the victory, or the chess master who's able to take on real, actual opponents and beat them soundly because he's just so darn good at chess. Obviously, the second is more powerful, and that's the way Tozer views his concept of God's sovereignty. It's a higher view of sovereignty. And what Piper is doing here, he's kind of lumping all non-Calvinist in with this Western culture, this easy believism, this namby-pamby chicken soup for the soul kind of theology, and saying that's the lower form, that's the lower culture. You've got to rise to the level of the Calvinistic view of God, which is that he is in complete deterministic control of all things. Yet the very man he uses to introduce that concept doesn't even hold to that view because he sees it as a lower view of God. And on that scale, if you're going to talk about low versus middle versus high view of God, yes, I would agree with John Piper that this easy believism, seeker-sensitive kind of world that we see within a lot of Western cultures that just wants people to be happy, let's not stir the waters, let's not get the controversial questions in here, let's not talk about predestination and election because someone might get in an argument, let's just ignore those things. If anybody asks a question, just quote John 3:16 and let it go. That kind of that kind of culture that this resurgence of Calvinism has grown out of, you know what? I agree with John Piper. That is a low form of a view of God, and it should be addressed. But the irony that I'm pointing out is that Tozer was above, I believe, in my estimation, in his view of God, even higher than where Calvinism is that he holds to the glory and the high view of God's glory and high view of God so high that his sovereignty even surpasses that of the deterministic worldview that God has to play both sides of the chessboard. He has to play both evil and good and determine it all and have a micromanaging control, as Piper describes in other messages, where not even one molecule is out of God's complete sovereign oversight. And that's how he defines sovereignty. Yet in Tozer's view, that is a low form of God. That would be the very idolatry that he's warning against, of ascribing an idea about God that's not true of God. And that's the fountain he speaks of which the polluted waters of idolatry flows. And the perverted notions, as Tozer says, perverted notions about God soon rot the religion in which they appear. So what's the point we're trying to get to here? There's a weighty view of God and his glory that's not Calvinistic, but it's still weighty. Matter of fact, I would say it's even weightier than Calvinism. It's even higher than Calvinism. Let me read you a quote from a scholar and see if you can recognize who it may be. It's this. It says, "The providence of God is present with and presides over all things, and all things according to their essence, quantities, qualities, relations, actions, passions, places, times, stations, and habits are subject to his governance, conservation, and direction. I accept neither particular, sublunary, vile, or contingent things, not even the free wills of man or of angels, either good or evil. And what is still more, I do not take away from the government of the divine providence, even sins themselves, whether we take into our consideration their commencement, their progress, or their termination. To the essence of God, no attribute can be added, whether distinguished from it in reality, by relation, or by mere conception of the mind, but only a mode of preeminence can be attributed to it, according to which it is understood to comprise within itself and to exceed all the perfections of all things. This mode may be declared in this one expression: the divine essence is uncaused and without commencement. Hence it follows that this essence is infinite, from this that it is eternal and immeasurable, and lastly that it is unchangeable, impassible, incorruptible." You know who said that? Jacobus Arminius. Now, I don't agree with everything that Arminius believed or taught, nor do I believe everything necessarily that A.W. Tozer believed or taught. Very few theologians agree about every single other theologian's viewpoints on every single subject. But the point I'm trying to make is that if you go back and read some of the divines, some of the early church fathers, you find people who did not side with Calvin, but who still had a very deep, weighty view of God. And that's what this culture is longing for. And if that's what they're longing for, let me just say, you can find it outside of Calvinism. You don't have to accept the deterministic structure of the Calvinistic worldview. I think there is even a higher view beyond Calvinism, which sees God as so sovereign, so good, so powerful, so holy, 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 that he doesn't have to play both sides of the chessboard to ensure his victory. That he can and does use man's freedom and allows for the autonomous will of mankind, and in that freedom still accomplishes his purposes and his plans. That view of God is still weighty. It is still very high. It is still most glorious. And it does not end the process of trying to explain these very infinite deep matters, impugn the holiness of our divine creator by suggesting in any way, shape, or form that he is to blame for sin. that he is to blame for the choices of man who walk away and rebel, that he is to blame for the response of those who are around us, who we love, who are lost, by suggesting that God does not really love them, God does not really choose them, God does not really grant to them the ability to believe, God does not really want them to come to faith. Those doctrines are not found in the word that I read, but the higher view of God is one who loves, one who seeks after the lost, one who genuinely hates sin and hates what it does to the crown of his creation, mankind, and that God's glory is most awesomely, and I use the word awesome there as truly as it's meant to mean, awesome, in that he shows his glory through the way he loves mankind, through expressing his glory by sharing glory with mankind. Now, some people, they rebel at the concept of God sharing his glory, yet Scripture, John 17, teaches that he shares in his glory. And in doing so, he's made all the more glorious in doing it. He's made glorious in showing through Christ his love for his enemies, the very ones who are crucifying him, praying for their forgiveness as they do it. That's the reflection of God's love we see in Christ, that he loves his enemies. He doesn't hate them. He doesn't reject them. But he reaches out to those who are rebellious, holding out his hands to them, longing to gather them despite their rebellion, despite their sin. That's the glorious, high view of a truly sovereign, omnipotent, omniscient, holy, holy, holy God. We'll continue to walk through some of these sermons from Piper and also look a little bit more at Tozer, because I think he gives some great insight into this understanding of the holiness and the sovereignty of God. Tune in next time.
When I try, I'm a fool. This time I'm spent and I've realized that I can't make it through. I need you. The words you say, your gracious love just gives you away. The words you say, you're so believable.
Thank you for sitting in on our online class today. To enter our discussion with your questions or comments for future podcasts, please visit us online at www.soteriology101.com.
You're so believable.